thank you all too for bearing with us. Apparently Zoom has done some updating, which makes it harder for our hosts to catch up to things. So thanks for your patience. The Reverend Teresa Soto is a brilliant theologian and social analyst. They're a passionate fighter for marginalized people of all kinds, and a wise human, a wise, wise human who holds deep compassion for all people. Teresa is also a disabled genderqueer person of color. They were in seminary class, the one that graduated 2 years after mine. So I didn't have a lot of deep interaction with them during that time. But when we met at a smallish collegial gathering a few years later, we'd had so little interaction that they didn't actually remember who I was, which is fine. But nevertheless, at a small group check-in, during which I revealed that my husband of 18 years had just left me 2 months earlier, and I shared my grief and my rage and my fear that I was losing myself and that I and my ministry would fall apart. Teresa heard this in our small group and later went to the retreat center's gift shop. And she bought this goddess. And after our closing worship the next day or 2 days later, she found me. They found me. They pressed their hand into mine and handed me this and said, "I know you will remember who you are." They also, several years later at the General Assembly's Service of the Living Tradition, where they were being recognized for receiving full fellowship by the UU Ministers Association, by the credentialing, the Ministerial Fellowship Committee, sorry. They sat in their scooter directly behind the Reverend Bill Sinkford, who was speaking. Reverend Sinkford is a Black elder who left our faith during the tumultuous time of the 1960s, when UUism was blind to the harm that we were doing to our people of color. And Teresa was in her scooter behind Reverend Sinkford because to get up onto the rest of the stage, you had to go up steps and file into your seat. There were a lot of people sitting behind Reverend Sinkford. They were recognizing all of the ministers who had reached various landmarks. And so Teresa was sitting in her scooter, their scooter, behind Reverend Sinkford. And as Reverend Sinkford reflected on the work we've done together to reconcile and repair the harm that we did in the 60s and that we continue to do, every time he used language that unintentionally marginalized other groups of people that weren't centered in his perspective, particularly disabled people like Teresa's own self, Teresa held up a huge white sign that had the word "ouch" written in capital letters to draw attention to the harm being caused, because you can't fix harm if you don't realize you're doing it. We all have the ability to cause harm because we're not living in each other's skin, right? And it's human to center and speak from our own perspective, which doesn't always take into account the experiences of others. We have talked about this so many times, and we will continue to do so. And as Teresa's work exemplifies, we all have the capacity to feel compassion for others being harmed, even when we're the ones causing the harm. And so we all have the capacity to function in this intersection that Teresa represents, the intersections of experiencing harm and causing harm, and working to co-create a world in which no one has to experience harm. This is, I believe, the place that Teresa shows our faith tradition, the intersection of knowing the world is on fire, which we humans have caused, and knowing that we have the capacity to quench the fire, to save ourselves, our siblings, our planet, so that we can level up in what it means to thrive, in Teresa's words. We and our community, they say, are the answer. Now, I had hoped to bring other Reeb voices into this service, so my perspective on General Assembly wasn't the only one you heard. And unfortunately, that turned out not to work out. So here I am. I'm going to offer you a couple of stories and some information at what happened at the general sessions, the business sessions, in which the 2,278 delegates from the 656 congregations from 49 states and DC, plus Mexico and the Philippines and three Canadian provinces, I'm going to offer some information about the decisions that were made by those people for our congregations on our bylaws, our board members, and our areas of work for justice. And I'll share a little bit of how GA felt. So first, a couple of words to help you understand our governance process. Bear with me. The UUA is the Unitarian Universalist Association of Congregations. There are 1,100 congregations in that association, mostly in the US, but some are in Canada and Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands and New Zealand and Australia and the Philippines and France. The UUA, just like our congregation, has bylaws. They're created and revised by the body of congregations through meetings of delegates, through General Assembly, which has a set of rules and procedures on how business happens. The bylaws also define the Board of Trustees and their work in doing, their role in doing the work of our association. And just like at Reeb, there are various committees of the board who work on specific things they're charged with, and they report to the delegates on that work every year. So that's part of the general sessions, is hearing the reports from all the committees. The bylaws are broken into articles that have to do with different aspects of how we are structured as a denomination. So for example, there's an article on ministry and how ministers are credentialed. There's an article that lists our agreed upon purposes and principles because they came about through this process of delegates meeting to create them. And the board carries out decisions made by the Association of Congregations. So they report out and then they get information back from us and they carry on with next year. And remember, the association means the congregations. So reports are heard and decisions are made when the body of delegates from the congregations gathers every June. That's our General Assembly. And GA is also a time to learn about and from each other. There's workshops and we worship together and we honor our youth in a special bridging service. So not everybody who comes is a delegate. Not everybody who comes goes to the business sessions. I'm focusing basically on the reports and the decisions today. The decisions take various forms. Sometimes there are changes to our bylaws because, just like our congregation, we are a living tradition. Change happens as we learn and we grow. Most recently, that change has been focused on how our faith has been operating in the paradigm of the culture of white supremacy and the centering of the voices and the experience of white, cisgender, male, able-bodied people with money. So changes are being guided in our understanding of the imperative to dismantle that culture, which of course shows up all over our bylaws, right? Our culture is in our bylaws. We also decide who will be on our board and who will represent us in the world. Elections for board and president and other positions. And we talk about and debate and make decisions on what we will say we stand for. That's the most exciting part for me. So among this year's reports and decisions were a report from a group called the Article 2 Commission. The Article 2 is a piece of our bylaws that contains our association's purposes and principles. And the commission is reviewing and will possibly change those purposes and principles through a process of feedback and questioning and workshops with all of our congregations who choose to participate in that process. This is not unlike the mission statement process that we underwent a couple of years ago. We made some decisions and voted on some things about what we stand for in the world. We created a statement of conscience, which is kind of the culmination of a three-year process where congregations will bring what we call study action items, things that they are passionate about in their communities and the world. And the body of delegates chooses an issue at the beginning of the three-year process. And then there's years of study and action and reflection by our congregations. And in the third year, which was this year for this particular statement of conscience, in that third year, the delegates can vote to approve a state of conscience, a statement of conscience that has been put together out of that process. The name of this year's statement of conscience is Undoing Systemic White Supremacy, A Call to Prophetic Action. And you can find a link to the text of that, as well as everything else I'm going to talk about, in your weekly newsletter that came out this past Wednesday. The other thing we made decisions on is something called Actions of Immediate Witness, where there are things happening in our world that we don't have 3 years to study, right? That happens all the time. And so delegates at each General Assembly get to take an opportunity, a chance, to take positions on some of those issues that require really much faster attention, right? Undoing systemic white supremacy is decades worth of work. And there are things we can do immediately to work at that, but the larger picture is appropriate for a statement of conscience. Those statements of conscience are brought by congregations and through a process. Actions of immediate witness happen in the 5 days of General Assembly. They are created, they are honed and edited, and they are brought to the full floor, at which point we have to choose three out of however many are offered. Those three get admitted to the agenda, and then the next day we vote on the finalized versions of those three. So this year, and again, these actions of immediate witness are in your weekly email, this year they are defend and advocate with transgender, non-binary, and intersex communities, stop voter suppression, and partner for voting rights and a multiracial democracy, and the COVID-19 pandemic, justice, healing, courage, which is really about our healthcare system and what we have learned this year during COVID. A third thing that happens and is voted on is something called a responsive resolution. And for me, this is the most fun part. I mean, if governance can be fun, this is it. Responsive resolutions happen at the end of GA, and they're created in response to this year's decisions. And then they're also voted on by the body. So they're even more real time than actions of immediate witness. So delegates heard how the conversation went about the statement of conscience around undoing systemic white supremacy culture. And they heard the report from the commission that's working on our purposes and principles. And several delegates got together and said, you know what? I think it's really important to focus, to ask the people putting together the workshops and who are asking for feedback on our purposes and principles, to very specifically say to them, quote, we ask the Article 2 Commission and the board to ensure proposed changes to Article 2 include in the principles a clear and direct statement that accountable, systemic, anti-racist, and anti-oppressive actions to build beloved community are part of what it means to be Unitarian Universalist. So there's a directive to the commission to not just think about anti-racism work as they work, but create a very clear understanding in the purposes and principles themselves that this work is part of what it means to be a UU. The language is so incredibly clear in that. And I'll reflect in a minute or two about the responses to that language in on the floor, because of course we're not all in the place where we agree with how that language was created. The second response of resolution was in response to some of the youth and young adults, many of the youth and young adults who gather at General Assembly, often find their voices not heard. There has been a lot of work to lift those voices and center them in different ways. And our business practices don't necessarily reflect that work in their eyes. What I'm saying in a different way is that in 2020, there was a resolution passed called Embodying Human Rights in Our Investment Decisions. And in 2014, one on fossil fuel divestment. Our youth and young people are incredibly invested in how quickly and how we act in our investment strategies and who we invest in as a body. They have been deeply dissatisfied in how slowly the Committee on Finances is moving in response to those past resolutions. And so they put together a responsive resolution called Creating a More Just Future Through Divesting from Pipelines and Investing in Young People. I'm going to get those up on the website as well, those resolutions. So I hope what I'm giving you a feel for is that this is all grounded in our understanding of who we are and of our principles and our values. We're a representative democracy in structure, right? In which the delegates from the congregations make the decisions based on what they bring from their congregations and on the reports of the committees doing the work that we authorized them to do last year and in other years. It works beautifully in some ways and really awfully in others. So a couple of quick stories about that and how it felt. Typically, we meet in a giant conference room and there are a couple of thousand people in it. Imagine, if you will, our annual congregational meeting with our 60 or so folks. Imagine it 40 times bigger. That's what it feels like. That's what it is. It's what it looks like. There are microphones for people to speak for a proposal or with concerns about a proposal. This year, the sessions were moderated by a young adult, African-American, queer man named Greg Boyd. Greg has been part of the team of co-moderators that's been presiding over General Assembly the last couple of years. And we last year elected two new co-moderators. And they decided that Greg's method of leading these meetings, of working people through these meetings, worked so beautifully that they asked him to do it again. And so the first time a decision was made on the first day, you know how, you know, in our annual meetings, we run the mic around a little bit. We let people, you know, we invite people to speak. I almost said let. That's not the right word. We invite people to speak on the things being brought up. And then someone calls for a vote and we vote. We are kind in our conversations at REAP. Very, very kind. We are careful in how we say things and how we present things, because we know there are people not like us in the room. We speak and we listen with compassion. When there are 2,000 people in the room, from all over the country and all different churches with all different agendas and points of view. That does not always happen. And debate can get, I don't want to say ugly. Ugly is not the right word. Debate can get unintentional. And things will spill out of people's mouths that create ouches, particularly for people who are people of color or disabled or queer or genderqueer. So anyway, sorry, I'm drifting. So, so this year, 2,278 delegates, all online, every single one of us online. We have chat rooms where we can, where we are invited. Greg invites us every time an issue comes up. Greg invites us in our chat rooms to have conversations about the issues. And in the chat rooms, when there's an ouch, it's labeled. And people say, hey, you know, that person identifies as they, them. You know, could you please use the right pronouns? For example, one of many things. And then we get out of our chat rooms, and then general discussion happens. Used to be called debate. We're calling it discussion these days to try to soften the feel of it. And so the first thing that we, and I don't even remember what it was, but the first thing we voted on was a relatively simple thing. Greg put us in our chat rooms. Well, we were in our chat rooms. Greg invited us to discuss in our chat rooms. Then after a couple of minutes went by, Greg said, okay, let's all come back together. We have 12 minutes. There's a timer on all of this, of course, because we have 2,000 people. We have to, and it's all in the rules and the procedures. We have 12 minutes to talk about this thing. Let's talk about this thing. So we talk about the thing. There are contentiously divided opinions, some spoken in a dismissive way, some spoken in a very proactive, positive way. We came to a vote after the 12 minutes, and it was very clear that the people who were holding the dismissive points of view were in serious minority, like 96% to 4%. And so we voted in the thing, and that's where the title of this service comes from, because Greg said, once we did that, hey, we did a thing. Let's keep going. Which was a really good thing. The first responsive resolution that I talked about, the idea of asking the commission working on the principles article to very explicitly word things and have conversations grounded in the understanding that undoing systemic racism is part of being a Unitarian Universalist, had a lot of debate. And within that debate, there were a few folks, because Greg alternates, the moderator alternates, somebody at the pro mic gets to speak, and then somebody at the concern mic gets to speak. And so they're alternating back and forth. All the people at the pro mic were talking about what a good thing this was, how wonderful it was to finally be thinking more out of love and inclusion, and very specifically than out of fear. And the people on the concern side had a lot to say about how we shouldn't be focusing on just language and how we're all the same underneath, and there's no such thing as the culture of white supremacy, and other things that when they are heard by people struggling under that culture, cause harm. And so one of our delegates who preached here for us this past year, the Reverend Edie Love, came up on the pro mic, and she's holding her little African-American toddler in her arms. And she says, sorry, my toddler might babble. She just asked to be picked up, so I'm picking her up. And I am just here to say that we really need to stop debating about language. It's been, it's very clear that there is harm being caused. It's very clear that it is part of Unitarian Universalism in our learning and growing to be focused very explicitly on this work. And enough is enough. Can we please stop debating about this? And the toddler, before Edie could turn off her mic, said, "Mommy, are you mad at them?" And of course, Mommy was. So there's all of this, right? All in all, Edie really captured that spirit. There is a lot of enough already. Enough already. And yes, Randy, the effort is being made to get marginalized folks into the discussion. That is what these business, these resolutions are about. That is the work. That is the work of letting us process in little chat rooms before we say things to everyone on the floor. That's all part of this work. So all in all, I felt that. I felt that spirit of enough already, enough already. Let's get the work done. And so the general feel was that I did feel more inclusion. I felt people being more careful with their language. And I know we can talk for hours about, you know, whether language is political correctness or how it causes harm. There was thinking about disabilities and how they impact people's experience. If you were working with an ASL interpreter, or if you couldn't see and there were people talking, they would describe themselves and what they looked like. They would describe where they're speaking from in terms of whose lands were stolen for them to be there. In addition, the virtual platform, now that we've had a couple of years of having delegates participate online, they're doing a way better job. And in particular, 2 years ago, I talked about joining the event virtually when the event was live and how dissatisfying that was. This was deeply satisfying. The chat rooms were amazing. I stumbled last year into the chat room that most of the youth and young adults were in. They had coordinated themselves into a chat room. And so I got to spend all of GA with our youth and young adults. And I sought that chat room out this year because they are sharp and on point. It's feeling like we're feeling more excitement than fear this year, in the words of our story. And so everything is still on fire. And we're working to put out the ravenous flames and heal the world through process and procedure and inclusion, none of which are perfect, but are moving.
Our second wisdom reading is also from our own tradition. The Reverend Karen Johnston is the minister for the Unitarian Society in East Brunswick, New Jersey. She wrote this piece in response to the one you heard Reverend Soto read earlier. Worlds are on fire. Perhaps your corner of the world, or yours, mine. Sometimes, sure, ours, more and more, the whole wide world ablaze. Fire or not, this is no time to shrink or shirk. While despair or grief may enter the room of your heart, it's not the only occupant there. There's more to you and more to us than that sticky residue of pain. Your heart keeps company with ancestors who lent you deep wisdom, abiding love, scientific curiosity, wellsprings of compassion, and humor when all else fails. It is time to connect, to feel the deep truth of no separation. It is time to thrive, though there are times you doubt it possible. This thing is our thing. This time is our time. It is to this moment each are called, all are called. Called to hope, or not. Called to heal beyond borders. Called to resist, insist, persist. Called to hold back the flames. Everything is on fire, but all is not lost.
Friends, let that be our closing reflection. Change is constant, and our process provides for the changes in our association to be guided by our people. And so our people, like all people, never think the same way about any particular thing. So there is discussion and there is debate, which can and often does cause harm, especially when it's not done mindfully. We, and when I say we, I say most of the people represented at our annual assembly this year, we are trying to shape the changes in what we do and how we do it in a way that minimizes harm, acknowledges it when it happens, and makes repair. This is hard, it's messy, and everything is on fire. But we are both able to change and worthy of change that honors us all. May it be so, and may we be so.